A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brialso Lake puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care-to-be-great.
And now,
it's 10 a.m.
Let's just get down to it.
And it's time for your sports fix.
Strap yourselves in, folks.
From two guys who have covered the teams you're passionate about for years.
We are professionals.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. A very happy Thursday to you. Show brought to you by Any Hour Services. No one helps more homeowners than Any Hour Services. Give them a call or schedule online, anyhourservices.com. That's anyhourservices.com. I'm rolling solo today. We've got Sarah Hossain back running the board. She's going to be helping me out. Big show coming up at 11:30, we'll be announcing number 18 on our Utah Jazz Top 50 list as that Jazz season continues to get closer and closer. The radio voice of the Utah Jazz, David Locke, will join us at 11:05 after a huge NBA day. Plus, we have a media day for the Utah Jazz coming up on Monday, so excited to break that down with David. And then coming up at 10:30, the top three stories at KSLSports.com. We're also going to talk to Bill Oram coming up here momentarily. Bill covers all things Oregon sports, and it is a very important day in Oregon sports history, so I figured no one better to talk to than Bill Oram from the Oregonian. But Bill, let's start with Montana football. What's going on, Bill?
Montana football's in trouble, Ben. That's what I would say. Nearly lost to Division II Ferris State 2 weeks ago. Lost to NAU for the first time in my lifetime. I'm concerned, Ben. I'm concerned about Montana football.
I honestly didn't know what they were doing this year, so I'm sorry to hear that. What are you? You're not a Montana State guy. That's the rival.
When I was in school, Ben, Montana won 13 straight Big Sky Conference championships. It's a new Big Sky Conference. The league has changed. Montana has to evolve, too. But instead, we're stuck with the old ways, Ben. Very, very sore subject.
I apologize. I didn't want to start you off on a bad day. All right, well, I was going to have you on to talk Oregon State football and a little Oregon. And, of course, we get the Damian Lillard trade yesterday. So things couldn't have gone any better here. Before we get to football, let's talk Damian Lillard. Let's talk the Portland Trailblazers.
Yeah.
First of all, how did they, as an organization, handle this? Because they got dealt kind of a tough hand from Dame. Remember, he asked out right after they, you know, opened free agency. They found themselves in trouble. They'd spent a bunch of money, and then their maybe best player in franchise history said, oh, by the way, I don't want to be here next season.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of, you know, trending in that direction, as you know, Ben, where, you know, the Blazers were trying to thread a really difficult needle for quite a while in terms of, you know, basically giving the keys completely over to Dame. They'd given him a contract extension that, you know, really limited them financially, of course, but still trying to bring in high-end talent to make them contend. And that was always going to be a difficult task. And, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day, and I told them, you know, basically at a certain point as a GM, you have to start looking at the odds of being able to do what you are trying to do. And the odds were not good. And the Blazers and Damian Lillard both repeatedly kept betting on the long shot. And so that put him in a position where, you know, Dame finally asks out at 33 years old, you know, with that extension about to kick in, you know, not the attractive asset he would have been if he was traded 2 years earlier. And then to compound things, he says, Miami or bust. And I think everything that the Blazers did in terms of slow playing it, in terms of waiting, in terms of saying we're not going to just cave to the Miami request, ended up being rewarded. And I think it was handled smartly by Joe Cronin. And I think it's a bit of validation for Cronin, who has been pretty significantly maligned as an executive because, you know, he got the job first as an interim when Neil Olshey got fired, sort of rose to the position internally, was unable to deliver on the let's build around Dame plan. And so then when he pivoted to, okay, we're going to build around Scoot Henderson and Shaedon Sharpe by trading Dame, I think what he has done has been really productive. You know, getting DeAndre Ayton, who is a guy who is badly in need of a change in scenery, and maybe it doesn't work out. Maybe he doesn't, maybe the issues that he had in Phoenix continue to dog him, but I think it's a worthwhile risk for a franchise like the Blazers. And then the pick from Milwaukee, the swaps, and then the opportunity to go shopping essentially with Drew Holiday and see what you can get back for him. And he's going to be highly in demand, I think, puts the Blazers in really good position. I think it was a smartly handled standoff by Joe Cronin.
Yeah, you talked about selling off Drew Holiday now, which obviously is the next move. Are they going to look to move? Would you expect Jeremy Grant? Is Anfernee Simons a part of the future? Because as you talked about, they already got Scoot Henderson, who I think was a great pick at number three. You've got Shaedon Sharpe, who looked like he was a star in the making. How many of these, I don't even want to say older guys, but guys who have been in the league 3 or 4 years, how many of those guys do they want to keep around?
Well, I mean, Anfernee Simons is on his second contract. He's making $25 million. I think that he can kind of be the adult in the room, at least with the guards for a year, but you're going to have to make a decision, over the next, year or so about how best to, if you can move forward with three guards in Sharpe, Simons and Henderson. I think pretty clearly Simons is going to be the odd man out there. But it doesn't have to be right away. Jeremy Grant's contract is probably not getting traded in the first couple of years, but I think it does allow him to be sort of the elder statesman of the locker room at 30 years old, 29, whatever he is. But he's going to be making $31 million a year. So, I mean, that contract is hefty. But as it gets a little bit later into that contract, does it become more attractive as the salary cap goes up? I think you would think so. And he just gives the Blazers some stability, too. And by the way, there was a lot of chatter this summer that the Blazers were doing wrong by Damian Lillard, that they failed him by not being able to build a winning team around him, that they didn't take care of him if they didn't trade him to Miami. And as a counterpoint, I would point to Jeremy Grant. That's a guy who I think we could have all sort of made an argument at the end of June. If you're not keeping Damian Lillard, don't tie yourself to Jeremy Grant for 5 years at, a huge money. And they did that in part, I think, because it shows that they do take care of their players. They do make sure their players get paid. They gave Jeremy Grant every cent he could possibly get. So I think that was a bit of sort of positioning themselves against the argument that they weren't taking care of Damian Lillard.
So let's talk DeAndre Ayton quickly, and then I want to get into the other parts of the trade, specifically Damian Lillard and what he has left. But DeAndre Ayton desperately needed a culture change, wasn't getting along with the front office, didn't get along with Monty Williams in Phoenix. What is the... I guess, how important is it that DeAndre Ayton pans out for Portland in this deal?
Well, I think that this was a little bit of a low-risk investment by the Blazers. I know Ayton is, on a max deal, gets, $35 million over the next 4 years. But he's a 25-year-old, borderline all-star caliber player in terms of production. He's going to have a bigger role in Portland. He's going to be playing with other young players. But, I mean, what did they give up, really, if you kind of parse this trade kind of as what Phoenix got and what Phoenix gave up? The Blazers really sent Yusuf Nurkic, Nasir Little, and Keon Johnson for Yusuf Nurkic, essentially, if you break it down. Yusuf Nurkic, was in and out in terms of productivity, in and out in terms of injuries. It's actually a lesser contract, but felt more bloated relative to his role and his contributions. I think that it was time for the Blazers to move off of Nurkic, especially if Lillard wasn't going to be here. Nasir Little, fringe contributor, Keon Johnson didn't play. So I don't think the Blazers really put too much on the line with Ayton. And the upside, again, for a player, number one pick in the draft just a few years ago, has been productive, did clash with the franchise. Again, goes back to, you know, a player in need of a fresh start. And, you know, we do know that, you know, big guys can take a little more time to fully pop. I mean, the talent is there. If you're Portland, you don't get that kind of talent coming through the door in free agency. Historically, it doesn't happen. So if you can be the landing place for a guy who is still trying to unlock some things, it's smart business. So I think that's what the Blazers did. I think that Chauncey Billups has, you know, a real gift when it comes to managing players and relating to players. I mean, I think there's other questions about his coaching acumen that we all have. But in terms of the people side of it, I think Chauncey is pretty special. And I think that might be the thing that that DeAndre Ayton needs after getting bruised up a little bit in Phoenix. So I'm curious to see it myself.
Dame had arguably the best statistical season of his career last year, minus the fact that he hasn't played more than 70 games in 5 years now, only played 58 last season. And they shut him down at times, you know, just to make sure he was not pushing it and they were trying to improve their draft stock, which helped. But where is he in his career and how long does he open this window for Milwaukee now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question because, you know, as a player at that age, you're always thinking he's, you know, an injury away, you know, whatever that, you know, major injury is, knock on wood. And obviously you don't want to see it for a player like Dame, who's just so dang likable. But, you know, his game isn't predicated on athleticism necessarily, but it is on quickness and sort of that first step and, you know, kind of that wiggle, I guess is kind of the word you hear a lot of players use. And that, and kind of the quick trigger with the pull up. I don't know how that ages, and I think, you know, obviously his ability to shoot it from 45 feet and his constantly expanding range is going to be a factor. I think he'll be good for the next 2 or 3 years probably, and then I think you're probably going to see a pretty sharp decline as Father Time takes its toll. But you know, in terms of Giannis being, you know, a little itchy as well and looking for some reinforcement, I don't know how it gets better than Dame, because that to me for this year and probably another year, I just think that makes them prohibitively intimidating and so well worth it for Milwaukee. And I think, you know, for the Blazers, a good gamble that by 2028, 2029, Milwaukee is going to be resetting, you know, even if Giannis is there, all these pieces that have made the Bucks great around him, you know, will have moved on. So they will have had to rebuild completely around Giannis, even if he's still there by 2028, because is Chris Middleton, Brooke Lopez, Damian Lillard still playing 5-6 years from now? It seems unlikely. So, you know, I think the Bucks got what they wanted, and then the Blazers also got, you know, what could be some pretty high value draft capital.
Bill Orms, our guest on the KSL Sports Zone. Quickly, one last thing on Dame. Did they do right by Dame to sending him to Milwaukee, and do you think they factored that in?
I think it is a factor. I don't think it was a primary factor. And yes, I do think they did right by him. You know, I don't think Damian was reasonable by pigeonholing himself into a one team, you know, destination. I don't think that made sense. I think it deflated his value. I think it did create some tension and hostility between the Blazers and Heat, and certainly between the fan bases and the writers. My God, Ben, I have never seen sports media so unhinged as over Damian Lillard and the Heat. I mean, have you? Like, that was one of the that was the most bizarre aspect to this, was how much people, you know, in our business seemed personally invested into whether or not the Heat were able to acquire Damian Lillard. I've just never really seen it. But in terms of, did they take care of him? I mean, this is a guy who has repeatedly said all he wants to do is win, that he's about championships. And you just paired him up with, you know, arguably the greatest player in the world, a two-time MVP, recent NBA champion, and a guy, by the way, he has stated that he wanted to play with in the past. So you did right by him because you put him in a situation where all of his goals can be fulfilled. And, you know, it wasn't Miami, but, you know, it's not reasonable to think that you can, with 4 years left on your contract, when you aren't a, you know, when you don't make sense for every single team anymore, that you can dictate your future down to a single team. And I think that it sounded like, based on some of the reporting yesterday, that over time, Damian and his representation started to understand that, and that they were good with Milwaukee. And so that little bit of context makes me feel even better about it. But even if Dame didn't want to go to Milwaukee specifically, from a basketball standpoint, you took care of him. You didn't send him to, you know, Timbuktu or whatever else, or a bad situation. I don't think there were any bad situations, because there's no team that is rebuilding or is going to stink that would say, hey, you know what we should do? We should trade everything for Damian Lillard. Like, that wasn't going to happen. It was always going to be a contending team, because those are the only teams that made sense for him. And I think this is as good of a situation as they were going to find.
I agree. I think it's a better spot than, you know, Toronto had he gone there. It's probably a better spot than Miami, in all honesty. I think he has a real chance to win a title now. Switching it over, talking college football. From Utah's perspective, I think Oregon State is a hurdle before they get to their bye week, and then they have this run after they face Cal where they play USC, they play Oregon, they've got Washington, three games over a four-week span. What does Utah mean to Oregon State this weekend?
Well, I mean, it's multifold, and you know, it's funny, just real quick, because of that schedule, that murderer's row you just laid out. You know, obviously, I paid a lot of attention to Oregon as well, and Oregon has Stanford this weekend, then a bye, and then goes Washington, Washington State, Utah, and then maybe Cal, and then USC. So I mean, it's a conference. It just seems like everybody has this stretch where they play all the juggernaut heavyweight teams in succession. And it's going to be fascinating to see who survives that. For Oregon State, I mean, coming off the loss at Washington State, there were a lot of questions. And it was a three-point loss, Ben, but it was not a three-point loss. I mean, that could have been a three-touchdown defeat easily, and it felt like it. So, you know, Oregon State has to be, you know, has to show that it is better than what we saw on the Palouse. And a lot of good teams have lost in Pullman over the years, and so I think there's a – I think we're extending a little bit of grace to the Beavers, but, you know, big time Friday night game, revamped Research Stadium, first time in a conference, you know, it's the conference opener in the new stadium. It's going to be absolutely electric, great opponent coming in, and I think really high stakes. You know, the Beavers won 10 games last year. It was only the third time in school history. You know, obviously have aspirations of exceeding that total this season. But if you open 0-2 in conference, it puts you really on the outside looking in of this of the Pac-12 when it's as good as it is right now, because it is tough sledding. So, you know, and you know, does DJ Uiagalelei remain the quarterback if you start 0-2 in the conference? I mean, they have a freshman that they love who they think is, you know, absolutely the future. You know, if DJ Uiagalelei isn't here to, you know, help you win a conference championship, or, you know, to win 10 games, or he's not throwing the ball well. I mean, that was the thing that I was thinking during that Washington State game, as they were just handing off to Damian Martinez and Deshaun Fenwick, who are great running backs. But, you know, last year, you know, they had a quarterback who did that just fine named Ben Gulbranson, and he won 7 games as a starter. He was a great game manager. But he couldn't throw the ball downfield. So you go get DJ Uiagalelei to throw the ball downfield, and then they're not doing it. And then when they do, he's not accurate. So I think there are some questions about whether or not DJ is delivering, you know, relative to expectations and relative to what else they have among their quarterbacks. So I think that those questions are starting to intensify a little bit. And so, you know, the Utah game is imperative to kind of get everybody believing again in the Beavers, because I left the Washington State game, you know, in Pullman, feeling like that team was not of the caliber of the other four or five teams in the top 25 from the conference. I mean, not as good as Oregon, not as good as Washington, not as good as Washington State, clearly. Utah is probably a better matchup, you know, going to be a bloody battle in the trenches. I mean, Oregon State's offensive line is one of the best in the country. Great running backs. Utah's rush defense is obviously tremendous. It's going to be a real test of wills. I think it's a really fascinating matchup, because it's going to basically be a question of who's better at what they do best.
Do you think there's a fear at Oregon State that if they allow DJ Uiagalelei to open it up, he could lose the game with his arm?
Yeah, I mean, I think fear is probably reasonable. I mean, that is kind of the risk with a guy who has been a little has struggled with accuracy, has, you know, as big of an arm as you're going to find anywhere. But he'll make some mistakes. He'll throw some interceptions. His ball comes out really, really fast. I mean, it's not the easiest. He's not the easiest passer to catch. So you get a lot of tips and balls kind of, up in the air. Anybody can get it. So I think there's some of that. And again, the strength and bread and butter is the run game, but you just want to be able to mix it up reliably. And, there have been times where I think Oregon State has tried to get too cute or outsmarted themselves. If you were watching that game on Saturday, they had a 4th-and-1 that was really pivotal, and they ran a little play action fade to Damian Martinez, the running back, who it was over his fingertips. And you just say, why? You've got a 6'5", 250-pound quarterback. Why are you throwing it to your running back on 4th-and-1, especially when, last year Oregon State had so much success on 4th down because they had Jack Coletto, right, who was a one-of-a-kind player, a former quarterback-turned-linebacker who could always get you 2 yards. And they don't have him anymore. But I look at DJ, and, it seems like every time he, runs a quarterback draw or just charges up the middle, it's 5 or 6 yards. I think that they need to get more comfortable, using him like they use Jack Coletto in those short yardage situations if they still want to be as aggressive on 4th down as Jonathan Smith has become known for.
Bill, I'm under the assumption that whoever wins the Pac-12 will go to the playoffs just because of the number of ranked teams they will have to beat to get there. With that in mind, yeah. Is it playoffs or bust for the Oregon Ducks?
I mean, yes, in that they... this is Bo Nix's last year. They obviously are stacked at a lot of positions. And I think also, it's going to get a lot harder after this year. This is probably as good of a path to the playoff as they're going to have, because once you're in the Big Ten, it's going to be a lot harder to get to the playoff, even an expanded 12-team playoff. You're going through Ohio State, Michigan, the real blue bloods of college football every weekend. Also Rutgers and Northwestern, but you get the point. This lines up well for Oregon, but again, are they going 3-0 against Washington, Washington State, and Utah with Washington and Utah on the road? If they do, they will be a top three team, and we'll be talking about them as a national championship contender, because that is going to be a really, really impressive slate. But playoffs or bust, I think, is a little bit dangerous, but certainly. That's what they're thinking. They feel like they solved some of their problems defensively. Bo Nix is playing at a Heisman level, as is seemingly every quarterback in the Pac-12, except for DJ at the moment. So I think that that's certainly where their heads are at. But I hate to say this because you can't do anything about your schedule, but who have they played? Texas Tech on the road was a really tough environment. They delivered, but that was a game they should have lost. That was a game they kind of stole down the stretch and, had a great fourth quarter and another, heroic performance by Bo Nix, where they kind of just put the ball in his hands and said, go save us. And he did. But when you're talking about UW in the rain, maybe it's cold and blustery. Maybe we get some good late October weather in Utah at Rice-Eccles. They have a gauntlet to run to get there.
And Texas Tech isn't very good. So that's a little bit concerning. Last question, Bill.
Yeah.
Do you have a read on what Oregon State and Washington State are going to be doing next year? We've kind of moved into Big 12 territory here, and it's not really a major focus anymore. What's your guess?
I think that they're going to be patient with it. I think that, maybe like the Damian Lillard trade, that there is no incentive to rush into it, to just jump into bed with the Mountain West. They're going to let the legal side of this play out as they try to secure the assets of the conference and have as much of a treasure chest as possible. I think ultimately the preference is to absorb, the more desirable programs of the Mountain West and the American into a Frankenstein version of the Pac-12. You keep the brand of the Pac-12, you keep the, you keep some of the infrastructure of the conference, and you bring in different schools. I don't know that that's a Power 5 conference. If you're bringing in Fresno State, San Diego State, Boise State, Utah State, and then a few teams from Nevada, and then a few teams from the American, I don't know that you keep your Power 5 status. That seems a little unlikely, but I think there's a lot of value in maintaining the brand of West Coast college athletics, and I think that's probably the preference. But that's going to take some time to play out. And in the meantime, next year could be really funky. If Oregon State and Washington State are still kind of letting it play out and they're playing sort of essentially an independent schedule, you know, they're probably going to play each other multiple times, which could be kind of fun, but also gets interesting because there's a scenario where they do maintain power, or they maintain A5 qualification, right, as a two-team conference. So Oregon State or Washington State could be ensured a spot in the playoff for the first couple of years just because of how this is playing out and kind of the mechanics of the CFP. So a fun little wrinkle would be interesting to see. But I, you know, in terms of predicting exactly how this ends, I think it's anybody's guess because you don't know how it's going to play out in court.
Read Bill Orme in the Oregonian. Root for the Montana Grizzlies. Bill, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Don't root for the Grizzlies. I'm giving up on my Grizz right now. I'm down in the dumps. Devote your energy to something, you know, more rewarding.
Everyone turn their attention to the Jets here locally. All right, Bill, thanks.
Thank you, Ben.
There he is, Bill Orme, longtime Utahn. Spent some time in Southern California as well, covering the Lakers. And an overall very enjoyable person to be around. Bill Orme from the Oregonian. When we come back, the top three stories at KSLSports.com. Stick around. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to break down the biggest stories of the day.
Let's go.
This is the top three stories of the day on KSLSports.com. On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Ben Anderson, Sarah Hosayan, filling in for Jake today. You're always here, Sarah, but we appreciate you jumping on. Top three stories of KSL Sports, brought to you by Jay Brooks Jewelers. You can find them online, jbrooksjewelers.com, or check them out in person, Murray or Lehigh. We are very rapidly approaching the holidays. You're looking for a great holiday gift. Right now is the time to start thinking about Jay Brooks Jewelers. Sarah, number one.
Damian Lillard traded to the Bucks.
Yeah, an enormous trade broke shortly after our show yesterday. This trade's been in the works for some time, at least the Portland Trailblazers shopping Dame. I'd been talking about it a lot. I do it on the Jazz Notes podcast that we record every Tuesday and is available there for you. The Bucks had been a name that had kind of been sprinkled around on the periphery. Toronto had been a front runner. Miami had been a front runner. Dame wanted to go to Miami, but he's always had this relationship with Milwaukee. And after Giannis Antetokounmpo had started to delay kind of this soft trade request saying, hey, I want to be wherever they're going to be all in to win a title. And Milwaukee was going to find themselves in a spot very soon, including as soon as next summer, where Drew Holiday could have left as a free agent had he opted out, and honestly, they just wouldn't have had enough money to be able to bring him back or enough cap space to re-sign him. I don't know what the future of Chris Middleton looks like. Brooke Lopez is still very good, but I think he's leaving his prime pretty rapidly. And at that point, they were going to have a bunch of aging players on big contracts and Giannis Antetokounmpo asking out. So I think they needed to make an ambitious move, and I'm glad they made an ambitious move and not a stupid move. I think Damian Lillard is the type of player who comes in and legitimately reopens their championship window for two more years, which is about all I think you can ask for with a player like Giannis to stick around and commit for. And then if you blow it up, fine. But you would rather blow it up having tried with Damian Lillard than blow it up having not really given it another go. And I think Damian Lillard opens that window. And I do think, and you saw it with Vegas, I do think the Milwaukee Bucks are the favorite now to win the title. And I think rightfully so. They belong in that conversation. the gap between Nikola Jokic is the best player in the NBA and Giannis Antetokounmpo, who I think is the second best, is probably not as big as it seemed last year just because Denver won the title and Milwaukee got eliminated in the first round. Giannis, at his best, fully engaged, when you've got the right players around him to support him, I don't think Chris Middleton was healthy at any point last year, is still an unbelievable two-way force, unlike many players we've ever seen in NBA history. He's capable of scoring 50 points in a closeout game of the finals. There are not many players ever who have been able to do that while also being the best defensive player on the floor. Giannis can do that. We know Brooke Lopez is a perennial candidate to win Defensive Player of the Year. And the big question mark, or the big thing we always wanted to see in Portland behind Damian Lillard, was what would a strong defensive center look like if they had a Rudy Gobert type, if they had a big guy who could protect the rim and make up for some of his defensive lapses, and you just allowed him to unlock everything offensively because he is supernova, he has an ability to score 50 or 60 points in any game, any night, regardless of the situation, home, road, regular season, postseason, he can do it. He will be fully unlocked in Milwaukee, and I'm excited to see that. And along those lines, if we're looking at some of the other teams in this trade, what Portland got, what Phoenix got, Portland's going to have to flip Drew Holiday. What they get for him might end up determining the value of this trade. I'm not sold on DeAndre Ayton, but it's a no-brainer to move Yusuf Nurkic for a younger player in DeAndre Ayton, who you have team control of and actually still has some all-star upside, to pair with Scoot Henderson. I think that's a smart move. I'm not sure it's still the equivalent of the price the Jazz got for either Donovan Mitchell or Rudy Gobert. I think those still set as the gold standard for blockbuster trades. And Damian Lillard's better than either of those guys, so it's just another credit to Justin Zanuck and Danny Ainge for the work that they did last summer, flipping those guys before it got too late. And my question for Phoenix is, what does Yusuf Nurkic bring? Grayson Allen played a little bit in the playoffs for the Bucks last year and was okay, but traditionally hasn't been a great postseason player. I like the idea of Nasir Little, but he's a fringe rotation player. That's not going to help a championship contender. And Yusuf Nurkic, I mean, the question behind Dame was, when is he going to get a good center? Well, the guy we were talking about replacing is Yusuf Nurkic, and now you're plugging him in to play next to Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, and his job's going to be easier in Phoenix than it was in Portland, but I'm not sure he's that upper echelon level center that you're going to need when you're facing the Nikola Jokic's of the world. I still think they're going to have to run into Rudy Gobert in the postseason. And now there's a chance that if you do get to the finals, you're facing the Milwaukee Bucks that have a Giannis Antetokounmpo who can match up with KD. They're going to be able to throw, not that Dame's going to be able to defend Devin Booker, but I think they can negate one another with their scoring. And then then Brooke Lopez is going to be a huge edge at center over Yusuf Nurkic if those two were to meet. I don't love it for Phoenix. I haven't loved what Phoenix actually did this offseason. I haven't loved what they've done over the last 12-month period. This might be another desperate move for the Suns that doesn't end up working out. Of course, we'll have to see what it looks like as the season goes on. Sarah, number two.
Number two, will Nate Johnson get the start again this weekend?
He was on Unrivaled yesterday, every Wednesday at 5 o'clock. You can check him out. It sounds like he's planning to come back and be the starter. I think, you know, we talked about with Jeremiah Jensen Tuesday, would you play Cam Rising in a game knowing you have the next week off, a bye week, and then you get Cal to come back, or do you just rest Cam Rising regardless, give him another two full weeks and basically a third because he doesn't have to get on the field until, the 7th when they play against Cal. Maybe it's even later than that. You might as well just take those days. If it's been an injury like this, you might as well give him as much rest as you can. And with all due respect, it's the 14th against Cal, excuse me. So, you know, 2.5 weeks now. That's a pretty soft landing. Cal is not a great football team. It's not a terror defense. If you can bring him back there and let him prepare for that second half of the season, shake the rust off against Cal, goes on the road and plays at USC, home against Oregon, home against Arizona State, at Washington, at Arizona, home against Colorado. It's a brutal 7-game run, but it's probably something Cam Rising's going to be able to handle if he's fully healthy, and I think that's a big plus for the Utes. And then at that point, you might have Brant Keithy back. I don't know if you played Jaquindon Jackson this weekend. If you can rest him, get him back. Kyle Whittingham has already said that the key for Jaquindon is going to be getting rest on that ankle. If you come back at 100% the second half of the season, you've got as good a chance as anyone, including Oregon, including Washington, including USC, of winning a couple of those games. Maybe you only lose one and you find yourself in the Pac-12 championship again, but you can't lose to the Oregon State Beavers this weekend. And you might have to hope that Nate Johnson's good enough to get it done and Jalen Glover's good enough to get it done on the offensive side of the ball. Talking to Bill Orem in the first segment, he said there's some fear that DJ Uiagalelei can lose you a game with his arm, and that's concerning if you're Oregon State, because that's not what you were looking for. You didn't want somebody who was just going to come in and be a game manager. That's what they had last year. You want somebody who can come in and actually make some throws. But if he gets wily when he's making throws, and right now he's got two touchdowns, three interceptions in his last two games, and it's not elite competition, certainly not an elite defense like he's going to face against Utah, that might really bog down that offense. They really might not try to be too explosive, at least through the air, which means it's going to be a low-scoring game. And Nate Johnson, I think, can still win a low-scoring game for the Utes. So if you're going to give Cam Rising rest, I do think Nate Johnson has a chance to get this win. Still going to be tough on the road, but I wouldn't rule it out.
I was just going to say, I think I could see them dressing Cam and having him, if worse comes to worse, and they're struggling. I mean, it hasn't been pretty and it hasn't been perfect, but they still have been winning with Nate.
Yep.
So I see them starting Nate, but having Cam there just in case things kind of hit the fan and they need him.
I wonder if the offense doesn't move, if they would mix in Bryson Barnes again. I know they were not super impressed with what he did against Baylor, nor was anybody. But at least he's a little bit more of a threat. They certainly feel more confident that he will take some of those deep shots that Nate Johnson doesn't even have the opportunity to take. Would they do that as well? I suspect they're not going to go in with just one option at quarterback, whether that's Cam or whether that's Bryson Barnes. I think they're going to try and mix it up, because I think they should expect to have to score at least 21 points to win this game. I don't think you're going to win this game 14-7. I don't think they expect to win this game 14-7. As good as that defense is, at some point these opposing offenses are going to break through. Even Dante Moore in a very tough environment, Utah, led an impressive drive and brought that game to within one score. At Oregon State, is going to be even more difficult. And I think the Utes are going to have to recognize going into that game that they're going to need to score some points.
Number three, Thursday Night Football.
Fun game tonight for us local fans. Jordan Love on his first start on Thursday Night Football, hosting the Lions at Lambeau Field. I love the Lions. I think they're a great story. I love Jordan Love. I think he's an even better story. And what he was able to do last week, winning his home opener, scoring 18 straight points after a pretty dismal first three quarters, I thought was incredible. A great close like that, and hopefully he can build off that momentum. He was so good in game one. Let's see how he looks now in game four as he starts to get more starts under his belt, but other teams start to scout him. I really like what Detroit has done. I think they're a legit competitor to at least make the playoffs this year, but I would love to see the Packers thrive under Jordan Love. I think he's one of our best stories that we've had locally in some time. So openly, I will be rooting for Jordan Love tonight against the Detroit Lions.
Talk about character development. I feel like he had the chance to develop, and we were hoping to see that with Zach Wilson, kind of similarly with Aaron Rodgers at the Jets, but that's not happening. So he's kind of gotten the short end of the stick, whereas Love got all that experience with Rodgers.
And I felt like Jordan overcame Aaron Rodgers a little bit more. Zach was so happy to let Aaron Rodgers come in, take the helm, be in charge for a year or two, and then come back and be ready to go. Aaron Rodgers never seemed to fully embrace Jordan Love, and the fact that they didn't draft talent or, you know, a skill position player next to him in the first round. They went and got a quarterback to play behind him and eventually replace him, which he did. But it never felt like Aaron Rodgers wrapped his arm around Jordan Love the way he did with Zach Wilson pretty quickly, like we saw in Hard Knocks. So I'm rooting for Jordan Love to overcome that and become the next great starter in Green Bay. I think that's a very cool legacy. It's a very lofty expectation for him. But his first three games have been promising. Exciting to see what he does tonight. All right, let's get into a view into the Big 12.
A look at the landscape of college football. It's a view into the Big 12, brought to you by Peach Windows and Doors on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Last year, we lost four games in a row against them and had a really hard-fought game last year up in Morgantown. We were fortunate to win, and so we know it's been a tough game for TCU in the past. This is a good football team, a team that played with a lot of confidence, you know, a lot of momentum, had a really good win against Pittsburgh, and then obviously a really good conference win against Texas Tech last week. You know, they're playing really physical, playing really hard. It looked like a typical, you know, West Virginia tough football team. So we'll have our hands full Saturday.
That's TCU head coach Sonny Dykes talking about their matchup this weekend against West Virginia. West Virginia's 3-1. I don't know if I love any of their wins. You heard him talk there. Texas Tech, who's not been very good this season. Pitt's never very good. Duquesne, it's not really a football team. But their only loss is at Penn State, and Penn State's a top 10 team, and that was on the road. But they have won three straight at home. They do go back on the road at TCU. I'm going to favor TCU in this game, but in our latest Big Pack Power Poll, Sarah, these teams went number 12 and number 11. So in our perspective early in the season, they're somewhat evenly matched up. I think we'll get a little bit more separation coming up this weekend when we see those two teams face off. A View into the Big 12 is brought to you by Peach Doors and Windows. Peach is Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Give them a call today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255. I will be at Peach tomorrow. You can stop on by and see me. More next. Stick around. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
For the best college football in Utah is on the KSL Sports Zone. It's a huge battle for the Utes as they hit the road to take on Oregon State. Your home for the best coverage of Utah football is right here on 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson, presented by Any Hour Services on 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone, rolling solo today. I am Ben Anderson. You can find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops or Instagram. A dud for college football tonight because they don't want to go head-to-head with the NFL. Middle Tennessee taking on Western Kentucky, Temple taking on Tulsa. And actually a decent game, Jacksonville State taking on Sam Houston. Sam Houston is technically winless, but they've played pretty good teams so far, including BYU early in the season. That game's only a 7-point, only has a 7-point spread for Jacksonville State. But speaking of favorites, tomorrow night's games are pretty interesting. We know Utah is on the road at Oregon State. Cincinnati's on the road here facing BYU. Oregon State's a 3.5-point favorite over Utah. That number's actually moved recently. Surprising to me is that BYU's a 2-point underdog against Cincinnati. There is some belief that Cincinnati's a, I don't know if I'd say a decent team, but a team good enough to go on the road and win against BYU. That would be surprising to me.
I feel like I keep my expectations very low for BYU, and because of that, I would not be surprised if Cincinnati came in here and shocked people. It's happened before with small teams,
sure.
Not as talented teams come in and, you know, BYU wins the games. No one expects them to win and
They lose to East Carolina.
Yeah, they lose the games that they're supposed to win, so... I don't know. I could see it going both ways. I hope that BYU pulls it out and doesn't start conference play 0-2. That would be rough. And what other games are they... Like, this is a game that they definitely need to win because it's going
to
be rough after this.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're 3-1 on the season. You lose to Kansas. If you lose to Cincinnati, first of all, you go into a bye week with the 2-game losing streak, which stinks, and then you come out of it on the road at TCU. Again, we'll see what TCU does against West Virginia this weekend. I suspect TCU gets a win there. That's going to be a very tough game for BYU. But if you start out 3-2, let's say you lose to TCU, you're 3-3. You've got to get three more wins over the last 6 weeks of the season. You play Texas Tech at home, who I don't think is very good. Maybe they start to figure it out, but they've already lost their starting quarterback for the season. You go at Texas, that's probably a loss. Again, West Virginia's playing better than I expected to. They haven't played anyone great other than Penn State, who they lost to open the season. Iowa State just showed over the weekend that they're capable of beating teams like Oklahoma State. They put up points in the 30s for the first time in what feels like decades. Oklahoma's going to be very good, and we'll see what Oklahoma State looks like at the end of the season. So I think you're right, Sarah. I know Jake would kill me for saying this, but this is a borderline must-win if you want to go to a bowl game. It's going to get dicey pretty quick if you lose this game.
Yeah, and I also feel a little uneasy because they have so many injuries. And going into the Big 12, that was one of my main concerns for them, is how are they going to stay competitive, because they are going to get banged up. And in the past, they haven't been able to stay competitive in an independent schedule,
sure,
let alone a conference schedule. So that's also what makes me feel a little skeptical, is because they have so many injuries, do they have the depth to compete?
Top-end talent's never a question at BYU. They have it. They've got 16 guys in the NFL right now. They've got guys playing at a very high level in the NFL. They've always been able to get those guys. But yeah, what does player number 25, number 35, number 45 look like down the depth chart? And are they able to step in and replace the Ben Bywaters of the world if he's not able to play tomorrow night? That will be the big question. Of course, we'll preview those games as we always do tomorrow with our insiders. Michelle Bodkin and Mitch Harper will join us. Coming up next, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, David Locke, will join us talking everything Utah Jazz. And Damian Lillard, stick around. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.